week ago.
Very good.
And I'm glad to see that up to the station call easy.
Okay, so I'll call the meeting to order. It's April 14th, 2026 at 5 o'clock. Chair Tom Donahue had some surgery. He's doing well, but he's unable to be here tonight. And so I am serving as your chair tonight. I'm not quite as formal as Tom usually is, so you're just going to have to get by with it. So for rules of conduct, make sure your phones are turned off, your pagers, so they're not going off in the middle. No political statements and no talking without being called upon. And we'll start the meeting with roll call. So, Director Shoemaker.
Here, present.
Director Anderson.
Here.
Director Doyle.
Here.
And we know Chair Donahue is not here, and I'm Director Skoroska. So the first item is the minutes of the March 10th, 2026 business meeting. Does anyone have any comments, changes, adjustment?
Yeah, they look good.
Then if we could have a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes from March,
March 10th?
March 10th.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Thank you. Financial report, accounts payable for March 15th, March 16th, and March 31st. Does anyone have any questions? Rochelle here to answer them.
I'm ready. You're ready.
She's ready to answer.
I see our big, seems like our big expenses month was the auditor fees.
Yes. So we finished that one financial audit and paid for that.
Okay. I mean, I know it's we've got to do it, but it's a lot of money. Otherwise, I didn't really see anything that looked unusual. Anything, Dan?
You know, I just quickly perused through it, and I did not see anything that jumped out at me.
Oh, well, that's great. I think it's the first time.
Thanks.
Don't let them give you a hard time, Dan.
All right, is there a motion to approve the accounts payable?
I'll make a motion that we approve the accounts payable from March 15th, March 16th, and March 31st, 2026 as presented.
I'll second that motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Fiscal year 25-26. Does anyone have any questions on it? The usual question. Are we on?
Right.
Are we on
target?
We are. I'd really like us to have some more SDCs.
Pardon?
Have some more SDCs, yeah.
But I'm sure they're all roll in June 29th.
Oh, yeah. Is that usually happens, that they'll come in the very last minute?
Because you only get a year from the time you get SDCs to actually connect.
Yeah.
Or else you have to pay more.
Pay more, you're right. So, okay.
If they're not ready.
Well, that's okay. It looks like we're still doing okay, though. We're pretty much on target. Doesn't look like we're over on anything.
No, we're getting a lot of progress done, too.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, moving right along, we'll go to the manager's report. John.
Did we need a motion to approve the fiscal year report?
No, we don't.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Before we move away from numbers for the budget committee, are we gonna get any hard copies of any of
yes.
that? Okay.
I'm gone next week, but the week after, John, Leonard, and I are all gonna get together finalize all the numbers that they want for projects next year.
Okay.
And you should see them either by the end of that week or very, very early next week.
That's okay. I just wanted to make sure we were going to get hard copies.
Yeah, you'll have about, I would say, 10 to 12 days to look at them.
Okay, perfect. Okay.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay, John.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Kathy. The manager's report for March 2026. As we just talked about, our system development charges are currently 6 water and 4 sewer, which is about half what we typically project for a year. It is true that sometimes we do get a couple of these trickle in before the prices increase,
right,
July 1st. Right. And so we're optimistic that some people will take advantage of that savings by paying for their SDCs before the fiscal year runs out. And so we're holding out hope for that. That's where we're at as it stands today. Switching over to our unaccounted for water, mentioned that it has actually increased to about 1.3 million gallons. And I decided to take a deeper dive into this. For I've been doing these reports now. Well, I started doing them when we had that big water leak that we had trouble finding because it was dumping straight into the river. Mm-hmm. And so, I've only been doing this, the form you're used to seeing in the manager's report, for about the last 3 years. And for the more than the first 2 years, when I did the math, I was mainly focused on reporting a percentage of water that was unaccounted for, which is often how people describe this parameter that gets measured at public water systems, but started reporting that as a volume because what I begin to see and understand is that we have such fluctuations in our water demand and our production from winter to summer that would skew the percentage, even though the total volume unaccounted for would remain the same. Mm-hmm. So I started reporting that as a volume, and what I did was is I went back about 3 years to when I started these reports, and I converted those into volumes too. But what I did in that case is, to keep the math simple, all I did was compared the water production from our wells and our treatment plant to our water consumption, which is all our water meters that determine individual customer billings. I didn't factor in anything else, just to do this quick analysis. I didn't factor in changes in reservoir level or deductions for process water or for flushing or for what we think estimated by known water leaks. Because I just kind of wanted to do a raw comparison between our supply meters and our demand meters. And what I found was interesting, just that raw difference between what's produced and what's consumed by our customers, on average, is over $1 million or 1 million gallons difference between the readings. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So and on average, all the other stuff that I factor in, the reservoir levels and the process water and all that, in an average month might account for maybe 250,000 gallons. So it's not really significant based on the total of unaccounted water we're looking at. But just doing that raw comparison, I found that we're probably averaging 900,000 gallons of our unaccounted for water is strictly a difference between those meter readings. It's not water lost. It's an actual difference between collectively what our customers' water meters read for their consumption and collectively between the wells in Horn Creek what we measure for water produced. And what stands out to me here is that 3/4 of the unaccounted for water I report every month is not caused by water leaks or in some other way just missing water. It is raw differences between meter readings. So that kind of opened my eyes a bit, and I think certainly I think Leonard and the staff were relieved, because I've been putting a lot of pressure on them to find water leaks that may not even exist. So what does that tell us, and how can we improve that? The only thing I can think is it's our main production meter at Horn Creek that is over-registering. The only problem with that theory is it's a mechanical propeller meter, and when those begin to wear out, they usually don't overread, they usually underread. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to replace that meter. That meter's been there a long time. It is a mechanical meter, which is has a propeller in the flow in the flow of water that spins. And how fast it spins is in direct relation to how much water is going past. But it is a mechanical meter, which means things can break down. It's not like a magnetic flow meter, which uses magnetic forces to measure the flow, and there's nothing in the stream of water that can wear out. This is a mechanical meter that has a propeller that could be impacted. And so my next response to this issue is try to explain the differences in our production and our consumption meters, because that is clearly 3/4 of our unaccounted for water that I've been reporting every single month. So now that we've discovered that, the next thing on my agenda to do to address this issue is we're going to replace that meter.
Right.
Now, it's a 12-inch line, which means a 12-inch water meter is not going to be cheap, but it's the only thing that I can really come up with as the potential cause of this. I mean, we do have 6 wells, and we sometimes are on the wells, like we're on the wells right now. But all 6 of those would have to be malfunctioning in order to have the well meters explain this problem. The main production meter at Horn Creek is our main production meter, and I've got to rule it out as a possibility. Right. So,
I hope that's what it is.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, it's good news in the fact that I don't think we're really losing water. I just don't think, I think we've got a meter that isn't recording it properly. And we've got, 1,200 residential meters. I have to assume those are okay because, you know, they'd all have to be, and in that case, under-registering. And, you know, these residential positive displacement water meters are typically fairly reliable, and this is the basis for how water purveyors bill their customers.
And
so,
wasn't there a change out of meters not a long time ago?
And that's another good point. Yeah, 5 years ago, we replaced every water meter
that's
in town with a brand new water meter.
Yeah, so they should be. Okay.
Now, one variable that is thrown in is one of the reasons we changed that is because prior to that, we were hand reading every single meter every month. And now we've got radio meters that you drive by with your laptop and anything within range of the signal pulls in the meter readings automatically, which is a huge time saver.
Oh, yeah.
But it does add another variable is, you know, we don't think the water meters are broken or incorrectly reading. Is it possible that the signal getting translated is somehow not quite what it should be? But again, that would have to happen to 3/4 of these meters to make up this difference
of
water.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think that's happening. So I think the biggest culprit is our master flow meter at Horn Creek, and we are going to rule that out as a variable. still waiting on pricing on that. There's a chance we may have to wait to July 1st to do it. Mm-hmm. But if we have the budget left, we aren't going to waste any time. We're going to get that swapped out, and then we'll start getting some fresh data for a few months.
Do you have any idea how much that, I mean?
Well, I would guess that a 12-inch, even mm-hmm. a mechanical meter, I would guess that that's going to be between $6,000 and $8,000. Mm-hmm. So it's not huge.
But it's a big chip, yeah.
It's a lot more expensive than obviously a 3/4-inch water meter. So, so kind of some good news but still a mystery to solve here. And I just wanted to let you guys know what I found. But here's the list of numbers that I put for the produce, the consumption, and the difference. A couple of them I did have to factor in other activities, like we were flushing water mains that month. Well, obviously that's going to lead to a big difference between production and consumption, because that water truly is lost.
Well, it's just flushed away.
So, that water doesn't make it through a residential meter to where it registers and we can bill people for it. So,
I have a question.
Yeah.
So, I should be able to figure this out by looking, but the average consumer residential water usage, trying to get an idea how much a million gallons is, or 900,000 gallons.
Well, we have a lot of people. I would say our typical month, people are using less than 3,000 gallons.
Okay, and I know there's probably there's the delta on the sheet that says basically production and loss. So I'm just trying to wrap my head around how much a million gallons is.
It's a lot.
Well, we can put it this way. It is, during the last month, it is 20% of our total production.
Which total production was six?
Six, about six, 6 million. So, it probably averages 15 to 25%, depending on what our production is.
And so the bad analogy, tail wagging the dog, tail being, we got to have leaks. Now we're going to be more centralized on, are there really leaks?
Well, yeah, I think there's a couple of things that we can do proactively to help us with this. I mean, one of the tools we use is, because we can see the reservoir fill cycles, and we can see how long those fill cycles last. And, if we had a significant water leak, we should be able to see it in the reservoir activity. You know, if it's on the south side of town, it's going to come out of our 600K. If it's on the north side of town, it's going to come out of our 100K. And we ought to be able to see a pretty significant change in the number of fill cycles and the duration of those fill cycles. If we were losing a lot of water that went to the reservoir before it went on to the water main, where theoretically it could be lost. There are tools, but another thing that we have thought about and talked about, a lot of water systems install distribution system flow meters at key points in the distribution system. For example, coming in or out of the reservoirs. And by having a flow meter on some of these major arteries in the different parts of town, if we had those, we could read those flow meters and see a significant difference from one month to the next if we had a big water leak. And not only that, we'd know exactly which part of town it was. Okay. So there are some things proactively we're looking at doing. It's all time, money, and effort. But, it's something that at least maybe a half a dozen of them installed on water mains at key strategic parts of town, not only will help us to monitor where our water's going, but if we're losing water, it should be something that would tell us that something weird's happening, because this meter registered three times the flow it did last month.
you know what I'm saying? So, so it's, you know, chasing this stuff is a chore for any public water system, and, you know, it's, you just have to try to eliminate variables until you have that eureka moment and you find it. It was kind of like when we had that big water leak I mentioned. We were losing 65% of our produced water for three straight months before we found that water leak. And as soon as we found it and fixed it, we were right back to normal. So, you know, we try to use the tools we have to find this stuff and to analyze what's going on, but it's a challenge.
Have you ever put a dollar number to per gallon or 100,000 gallons or what's it cost to get a gallon of water?
We've had that conversation before. It's hard to determine because you have to take in labor, overhead.
Fuel, electricity, insurance, yeah. Every operating cost we have goes into a gallon of water. And so it's not an easy thing to do. And, you know, when we had that big leak, there was concern over the lost revenue from those dollars. But other than the cost to make the water, there was no lost revenue because there was never any demand for that water.
Right.
So, you know, just a couple of ways to look at that. So this isn't lost revenue. If we're losing water, it's we lose the cost of what it made to make the water.
Right.
But we don't also lose the revenue for it because there was never any demand for
right.
it. So does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I hope that new valve will resolve.
I hope so, too. I hope so, too.
I hope it's the wooden stake.
That's really, yeah. Yay.
Well, we're going to start with that, and we'll branch out from there. But I think our focus is going to be on our metering, primarily our production metering. Because we have to make some assumptions, and we have to assume that the relatively new 1,200 water meters we have on the consumption side have got to be accurate within a reasonable tolerance.
Right.
So I think the focus will be on our production meter, starting with our biggest one.
Okay.
Moving on to the next topic. So two of our five committee members, our budget committee members, willing to be here if they could, but they've got a conflict. So that puts us down to three. And Scott Culp is a pretty strong yes, but he has some reservations as well. But it sounds like we're going to have three out of the five. And, you know, while I was doing a dive into this, as I mentioned in the manager's report, I didn't realize this. I don't think Rochelle realized this, and I'm not sure any member of the board realized this. This is a three-year term for these people when they are appointed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they can be reappointed if we have a policy resolution that says we can do that, and we currently don't. So, as a board, I think we need to take a look at that and either formally reappoint people or some of the people that maybe have more going on than others and sometimes they have trouble making the meetings. And, mm-hmm. you know, there might be a couple of these people that wouldn't mind being relieved of their duties anyway. So, but I think as a board, now that we know that, we have to be sure that people that are participating on our budget committees have
officially appointed.
Yeah, have been appointed and their term has not expired. And so, you know, that's something to think about going forward. And just as a side note, and this is more information than anything, SDAO, the guidance from SDAO about board member compensation is very relaxed when it comes to board meetings or workshops or executive sessions or special meetings But I was surprised to see that in this ordinance, they flat out say that any member of the committee, they are not allowed to have any compensation for the time spent on that committee. And board members are considered, the five board members are considered part of that committee during those meetings.
So what happens if Scott can't make it and we get down to two?
We still have a quorum because of the five board members that would presumably be there.
Okay.
We can still do it. It's not quite the intent because you're trying to pull in, you know, some other constituents to be another set of eyes on this.
Okay.
But we, as long as we have six people present, because we have five budget committee members and five board members, that any combination of those two groups, as long as we got six people present, okay, we've got a quorum and we can move forward with our budget process.
Okay, so I think, you know, we don't have time to deal with it right now, but instead of waiting until next year and all of a sudden be in the same thing, that we need to have that resolution written and approved by the board, and that we need to contact each of the existing people and make, you know, and tell them your term is up. Do you actually want to stay on the board?
On the committee.
I mean, on the committee, on the budget. Because I know people that are interested in being on the committee that would actually come to the meeting and ask questions, intelligent questions.
I think that's a great idea. I think this is something we have to do sooner rather than later. Doing this before our next budget meeting would be very, very aggressive.
Yeah, we'll manage for this year. I just hate to see going next year and being in the same situation.
Yeah.
So the sooner we can get the resolution passed,
yep,
and formalized, then at your convenience, we can look at contacting people for next year and then putting out notices.
Yeah.
There's vacancies available, how many vacancies you actually have.
And I don't think we should delay, because filling vacancies can sometimes take a long time.
Yep.
Yes.
So I say as soon as we get done with this cycle, we make that a priority.
So who are the three that are right now?
Scott.
Scott
and Bill and Mark.
Okay.
And Mark may be the only one that isn't term limited at this point.
Yeah, because last year was his first year.
Last year was his first year. So, yeah.
And there is no rules or regulations or laws that say you can't re-up for, after your term, you can re-up for another term?
Yeah, you can re-up, but we would have to approve it again.
And in order to reappoint to successive terms, we need a written policy resolution that states that is our policy and that's how we will conduct our business.
Okay.
And we don't, as it stands now. I've never seen one, and you've never seen one either, so.
See the trouble I cause?
Moving on. I got a meeting with our design firm later this week, but I don't really have anything new to report about the North Broughton Water Main Improvement Project at this time. Since we're having a meeting to talk about this project in detail, I fully expect to have something new to report to the board at our next board meeting. But as it stands now, I don't really have anything new to report.
Okay, a question there, comment, question. I missed the last chamber meeting, but the chamber meeting that you spoke and rolled out to the people that were there,
yep,
this project.
Yep.
I didn't really come away with anybody that was long in the face or joyous it's going to happen or anything. So I just wondered if there had been any questions coming back to the district regarding that project?
No, absolutely none as of yet. I have broached the subject at least twice, if not three times, at chamber meetings already. Okay. I was also could not make the last month's meeting.
I was at the meeting.
But, you know, and we have, you know, sometimes it's the same people that attend and other times new people attend. So I'll probably go ahead and continue to remind people that attend or that come to these commerce meetings about this. We'll have a public meeting as it draws closer to talk about this that we will advertise very well, and we hope to get residents and business owners that will be impacted there and can ask questions. But we have not gotten any questions yet, but I have at least on a couple occasions during the Chamber of Commerce meetings, I have got up and spoke and introduced the project to whoever who was in the audience.
Have you done Pacific City Woods Citizens Advisory Council meeting?
No, I need to expand my
I think
context.
They meet what, once a quarter?
I'm not sure because
I'm not sure.
Once a quarter, it seems to be pretty well attended.
I believe the next one it might be May 2nd, next meeting.
Who heads that? Because I should reach out and make sure I'm on the.
The gentleman was just out here. Was,
huh? It's Bob's. No.
Bob's not doing it.
No.
No.
No, it's a gal.
I know, and I can't think of her name.
I'd have to go to the website and see who it is, but well, I think they would be more than happy to give you your time.
Yeah. Well, and I will take advantage of that, and there's probably a couple more groups that I should speak with as well. You know, of course, Chamber of Commerce meetings is the perfect setting because, you know, you got business owners along that strip that will be impacted. But I think just getting the word out to people is, as, you know, we're still quite a ways out, but as we get closer, this the communication about this is going to become more and more important. And so I need to attend some of these other meetings just so that I can be given a few minutes to get up and talk about it. I will do so. But I got a pen over here. Will you jot down the name of that organization for me?
Yeah. I'll just text
you. You want to text it to me?
I'll
that would be great.
You.
And if they've got a website, I'll look it up and I'll reach out.
Well, if they're talking about short-term rentals, floodplain, airport, and castle housing, there'll be pretty good attendance.
Pretty good attendance.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll make sure they get me on the agenda for at least one of those meetings coming up and probably circle back with them later in the year as the project gets closer. Let's see. General enclosure project update. So we've got, since the last report, we've got the ground restoration work done. We've got fencing contractor coming to start the fence modifications this Thursday. So by the end of next week, for sure, the fencing work will be done too, and we will be getting very close to wrapping this project up. And I've been talking about this for 2.5 years, this will be a good thing. And you know, just a reminder to the board, the benefit of this project is really primarily two things, but they're important considerations. One, it gets the emergency generators out of our shop so that we can put other vehicles and equipment in there. Getting them out of the shop and freeing up the room in our shop buildings for other pieces of equipment is very important. And this will significantly reduce our response time in the event of a power outage. So we can restore services to the entire town, even if the whole town is impacted by a power outage. we can get the whole town back up and running far faster with the generators already at the locations, already plugged in, than if they were in our shop buildings and we'd have to tow them to each location and hook them up one at a time, which is the way we've been doing this for a long time. So we're looking forward to reaping the benefits of that, and we are almost done with this project. Maybe 1 or 2 months more of reporting on it, and we should be past the point of having it on a manager's report or on the agenda. So very pleased about that. And just one more thing from the manager's report. Two of our employees, Jeb Pippinger and Bob Pippinger, successfully passed certification tests during the month of March. These were both wastewater certification related, and they studied hard, and they did a tremendous job. This is anytime you pass a certification test, regardless of what discipline it's in, water, wastewater collection, distribution, or what level it is, level one through level four, it takes a significant amount of study and work, and passing these certification tests is a significant achievement. So I try to make the board aware and sing the praises of our hardworking staff who are out there, increasing their knowledge and increasing their value to the authority, to our customers, to our regulators, and to themselves.
Right.
So congratulations to them. And I just wanted to let the board know.
Pass on from the board.
Pass on from the board. Yeah, we're very...
It's great that they're doing that.
Yes.
Yeah. Will do. I will do that. And other than that, that's all I've got on the manager's report, Kathy.
Okay, any questions on the manager's report? If none, let's move on to unfinished business.
Yeah, so a couple of updates about this. As the board knows, we were first approached by the South Tillamook County Emergency Volunteer Corps, interested in installing a radio tower at our 600K site to help with their emergency communications. Only a short time later, we were approached by Tillamook County for the same reason and for the same purpose. They are collaborating together, and I guess the main update I have for the board this month is that the county is now certain that this is their preferred location. Of all the sites they've looked at and considered, the county, as well as the volunteer corps, are certain that this location is their best choice or preferred choice to install a radio tower. They have also confirmed, the county, that their intent is to bring power up to the 600K reservoir, which is something we've always wanted to do. And this is no small thing. This will cost a lot of money. And as part of this process, they will ensure that we also have a power supply for any future needs or things we want to do up there. Currently we've got some equipment up there that's battery powered. The batteries are recharged by solar panels, but
not a lot of light gets in there.
we don't get a lot of juice, especially in the wintertime, and we do have communication failures up at our 600K reservoir for that reason alone. So getting power up there on somebody else's dime is going to be very big. And, later on, I'll probably suggest to the board that in exchange for this excellent benefit that we're getting by collaborating with these other agencies on this, You know, maybe the board would want to consider waiving a monetary lease agreement in exchange for all the dollars that they're put into getting the power up there. It is not uncommon for Tillamook County, anyway, to make a, you know, not a huge, but, you know, a modest monthly lease payment for the property that they've got their equipment on. You know, when that discussion happens, it'll be a board discussion, but I just want to emphasize the, you know, if we did this ourselves out of our own pocket, it would cost a huge amount of money. So something to think about.
I think it's a win-win situation.
You almost know, too good to be true.
It's beneficial for them and it's beneficial for us.
It's almost too good to be true.
Yeah. And I think it's going to work out good. We've got the unused space. We're never going to use it for anything else up at the 600K reservoir. So why not? And but the county is working on a formal proposal. To present to the board. Representatives of the county and the company who's managing this project for them have indicated a willingness to attend a board meeting to answer questions or whatever's necessary. But they're both of these organizations are excited by this opportunity, and they will work hard to get board approval for it. Let's put it that way. So,
did you happen to hear through any of the conversations anybody say, "Well, we were going to put it here, but wow, your place, your the mountaintop there is a better." So it's a win-win for them, is what I'm trying to get at. If you heard anything like
well,
that.
I have. It wasn't quite so much that, well, we like this place, but we like your place better. It's more that we've looked at four or five different locations, and every one of them is flawed except for this one, in terms of signal strength and that type of thing. So, you know, well,
there's some benefit to them too, because there's already the sites already there. There's a road to it.
Yep.
You know, so it's there's already a little bit of, if you will,
influence. Yeah,
you
know, it's a huge benefit for them. So, like you say, access is number one.
Yep. So it's good. Yeah.
Yep. Well, the lease price just went up.
Well, and I will say too that, and I need to invest. I need to look at this a little more. There are some private property owners in the area, and one of them owns at least part of the access road.
Right.
So I need to meet with this person, describe this project to them, get this person to buy into it as well. You know, I don't think there'll be any strong objections, but we have to include this person in these discussions. So, and I'll be doing that within the next month or so. Probably more like the next 2 to 3 weeks. You know, we're looking at realistically by the time everything's said and done, before this equipment is built, constructed, and operational, we could still be looking at 18 months away.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, this is something that we do have time, it will be a process for them to get this realized, and so it's nothing that anybody has to make a real quick decision on. But we've got to get the board's approval, we've got to get the private property owners' approval, and let their process play out in terms of speccing the equipment and the radios that'll be used, getting them installed. Tillamook PUD is going to be heavily involved in this project with the power.
Right.
They're going to bury that power. They're not going to run overhead lines. They're going to bury it the entire length of the access road. I'm sure that's the way they'll come in.
Yeah. So it comes from Simmons up the road.
That's right. So they'll tie into, you know, their infrastructure somewhere in that part of town and extend it up to the top of the hill. So.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah. Yep.
Any more questions? Or?
No.
All right, let's move on to new business.
New business. Let's see here. Okay. So, as the board knows, anything that any purchase that exceeds $25,000 has to be approved by the board. We have a situation where we need to do some badly needed upgrades to our disc filters at our wastewater treatment plant. I put a description of what those are and what they do in the board packet. Is there any question about that in terms of just what this equipment is and what it does? They've got these cloth panels that polish the our wastewater treatment flow as it goes through the plant. This is one of the last stages in our process. This is kind of a polishing step before the treated wastewater goes to our UV system for disinfection, and from there it goes straight out to the river. These cloth panels are original, and they need to be replaced. And I know that $30,000 sounds a lot for some cloth.
You're talking about replacing all three of them.
Well, this is only for one of our three units.
And that's what I was going to say, the 30.
So
that's why I was asking, are we just talking about doing one, or are we talking about doing all three?
During this budget cycle, we're talking about doing one. Okay. During the next one, we'll do a second. Okay. During the next one, we'll do the third. Okay. We have one that is newer than the other two.
Okay.
So we're gonna tackle
that one for last.
We'll save that one for last. But we need to start this process with at least one of our older ones. And there's 112 cloth panels on, I believe it's five large rotating discs. And those have to be replaced. And the quote that we put in the board packet is the quote for doing that. That is the one from Veolia. I know it's in excess of $30,000, but if you guys approve it, somebody look up the number, because I can't remember off the top of my head what the exact dollar amount was.
Oh, it's right here. It's
$30,256.64. Yeah. So if there's no further questions about that, and this isn't... this is something that we certainly have the budget for. Otherwise, we wouldn't be coming.
We only have the budget for one.
We only have the budget for one.
I was going to say,
we would ask that the board approve that purchase at tonight's meeting.
Okay, before we do that, what happens if you don't do anything?
Well, they're starting to wear out, which means that, you know, they're not tight like a drum anymore. They're kind of, you know, the fabric's lost some of its rigidity. In a couple of cases, the fabric is torn and bypassing flow past the panel. And certainly the efficiency of how these panels do their job has been impaired over years of continuous use. They're just wore out. And so they aren't doing their job as well as they were when they were new. And they are starting to show structural signs of failure. And so, you know, if they'll probably fail one at a time, but each panel that fails is a conduit for an untreated bypass through the whole treatment process.
There's more on that later.
Yeah.
That sounds like a pretty important purchase.
Yeah. I would make a motion that we approve to spend the $30,256.64 to
Veolia
for the purchase of one of these new units.
Filtration units? Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, you got it done.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Gotta be done.
Next new business item, and you know, this is this one and the last one are some things that Rochelle, we might ask you to say a few words about. We have several delinquent accounts that through significant effort on our office staff's part and significant effort on our collection agency's part have not been able to recover. Some of these are old enough that our collection agency, we consulted with them and they've told us that these three accounts are four accounts. Is it four? I thought we had three on the list.
There's three on the list.
Just the three.
Yeah, that our collection agency feels that despite their best efforts, these accounts are not recoverable.
Okay, so I have several questions. So why are we only acting on these three when you have nine on this other sheet?
Some of them are still fairly new, but also the other ones that I have circled that they did not recommend yet, they believe that they're recoverable. They believe they can push these people hard enough that they are going to pay.
Oh, okay.
Okay, well, you have B. O'Connell circled, but on your other list, and I see that B. O'Connell apparently has a partner.
That's her brother.
Yeah.
Of some kind with that same address.
Yeah, I'm 100% positive I will be bringing that one to you in the future.
We haven't given up on it yet, yeah. Apparently.
Yeah. The collection agency doesn't want to give up on that one yet.
You're going to bring him. Why don't you combine them? It's the same residence.
They're two separate people, though.
Yeah, but it's the same residence.
It is, but they were two separate owners at different times.
Okay.
One owned it for a little while. She decided she was leaving. The other person took over and had a separate mailing address, separate phone number, separate social security number.
So the three that we're talking about are the three that are highlighted there.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other ones are still got life, a little life.
Still got a little life.
We think, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, not just us, but our collection agency thinks there's still some life left in those other ones.
Okay.
I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to bringing them to you, but they said that they believe that we can recover those funds.
Okay.
Any questions? Because I have a question.
I have one too, but go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Director Anderson.
I was just going to ask, what's it costing us or is the collection company just taking a portion of it?
They take 25%.
Okay, that's
which,
all.
Not bad.
Which is
standard,
pretty
insignificant. Yeah. And that's why I was just curious what it was.
Yeah.
And how long do they work on this?
Well, I mean, some of those are 3 years old.
And they've been working ever since?
Been working on
is there a time limit where you just say, cut your loss?
Our auditors would like us to do it in less than 12 months. Sometimes six.
That sounds reasonable.
Yeah. And that's our new audit team. The old audit team couldn't care less.
So, Rochelle, these people, none of the three, they are no longer in these residences?
Correct.
They're gone?
Yep. Moved away. If for some reason they ever purchased another home here, we have discussed having them pay a deposit, because that's what we expect of tenants that have accounts.
Okay. So just for my information, what do you do if you have someone who's living here and doesn't pay their water bill for months at a time? Do you cut them off?
They do get cut off after 90 days.
After 90 days. Okay. All right. Dan?
Along the same lines, I was just curious as to what the policy is of the district when it comes to renters versus owners and deposits and liens and those kinds of things that reduce our exposure.
Yeah, we recently created a policy, I guess, to have tenants pay deposits. because those seem to be the people that are leaving and not paying their bills. If for some reason there was a credit on their account, we would just issue them a check afterwards, and that would be fine. They could have their deposit back. But we have not implemented that with property owners yet, because we haven't really seen that being an issue, because most people that leave after selling their house are trying to buy another house, and this looks bad on their credit.
Okay. Yeah, and I should probably mention, too, that for years, the authority had a policy where we did not allow tenants to,
to be the
account holders. And I changed that, what, 18, two
yeah.
years ago at the most?
Yeah,
because this policy, once again, was something, a position that only Pacific City has taken in our industry. Everybody allows tenants to open an account, whether it's electricity or garbage. It's the same with water and sewer. And for years, we just said, no, I'm sorry, you'll have to deal with your landlord and make an arrangement between you two, because we're only dealing with the property owner. Well, we have changed that, and I think for the better. But the trade-off is that you do have to be a little careful with tenants, because when they move out, they have no ties to the property.
Right.
And so they're the class of customer that is most likely to
default
on their final billing. And because of that, in exchange for this allowing tenants to open accounts with us, we charge only tenants a $300 deposit, which is roughly the equivalent of 3 months worth of service, that will allow us to recoup our losses. And
yeah,
so, yeah, and I think it's working out pretty well. We're still going to have tenants be the highest particular group of customers that doesn't settle their account with us, but with the deposit, we have a way to recoup all if not almost all of that loss.
Okay, so that brings up the question of the $1,705.50 total. We've already used up their deposit, and
they did not have a deposit.
The policy was implemented after these people. The deposit part of it was.
What's the time frame?
We started the deposit policy maybe 2-3 months ago.
Yeah, we voted on it here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. You were there.
Yeah. So you know, once we saw the results of this, we decided, well, we weren't going to go back to only, you know, to a policy that we don't open accounts with tenants. But what we did was, is we came up with a policy that will protect us going forward.
Okay.
So the one that's $1,000, $1,200, how did it get so big? Because, like, my water bill is $105. That's almost a year.
She had a massive water leak.
She had a water leak.
The landlord should have paid it, should have reimbursed her or something, and she, so she moved out.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Any more questions?
No.
Is there a motion?
I make a motion that we go ahead and write off the three accounts, delinquent accounts, totaling $1,705.50.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay.
Thank you.
Learned a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, it's something important to our auditors, and it's something that a lot of businesses have to do, because eventually you have to clear your books.
You gotta give them,
you know, And this is the only way to do it, unfortunately. Next new business item, new wastewater discharge permit requirements. All wastewater treatment plants that that discharge into bodies of water must have a discharge permit. And that discharge permit is issued by DEQ. And it is typically good for a period of 5 years, and then you renew your permit for another 5 years, and you keep doing that as long as you keep operating a utility. And our permit has actually been expired for over a year now, and you know, it the permit writers, you know, they have to reevaluate your entire system every time they issue a new permit. And sometimes in the act of doing that, they come across reasons to increase your monitoring. And I'll be honest with you, regulators have a tendency on these permits to pretty consistently up the ante. Regulators do what regulators do, and the mindset is that when it comes to this stuff, more monitoring is always better than less monitoring. So in our case, there hasn't been any significant changes in the river from a water quality standpoint. We don't have any operational issues, but yet when we got the draft of the permit, in many cases they doubled our monitoring. Instead of one BOD test a week, now they're proposing we do two. Instead of one suspended solids test per week, now they're proposing we do two. And you know, it covers a variety of parameters where we've seen the increase. I mean, pH, temperature, E. coli, ammonia, all these parameters, the frequency of them has gone up for us. And the result is going to be more cost, more time, and more effort. You know, and we're, you know, a small utility. We've got a relatively small number of employees, so these changes are harder for us to absorb than for larger utilities. There is a comment period for us as the utility that is only a few weeks long. In fact, if they are requiring our comments in regard to their proposed permit by the 22nd of April, which is just a little over a week away. I will, I'll push back some. I'll do a little whining, but I don't think it's going to change anything. I really don't. But I will do my best to at least learn what their justification is. Because, you know, more monitoring simply for the sake of more monitoring is not very good justification considering the burden that this puts on us. Once our comment period is over, then it goes to a more widespread public comment period that any member of the public can comment on. So you may have seen, you know, I put an excerpt, I didn't put the whole draft permit in the board packet. I put most of the important stuff, including a listing of the increases in our in our monitoring and all the parameters and stuff. But you can see from the cover letters that this is a formal legal process that has to be gone through. And that involves a public comment period as well. So once all that's over, if we're lucky, we'll have the final permit in 3 months.
When did you say?
Three months. We should have the you know, just looking at the duration of the comment period, I'm guessing that they'll finalize the permit or edit it. The problem is if they edit it, they probably have to put it back out for another comment period. So another reason why they're probably not going to do it once they've made up their minds. But
yeah, unless you've got a really strong something to fight back with, they're going to...
Yeah, you know, it's really, you know, I guess my approach to this will be, instead of me giving them reasons to talk me out of it, I'd like them to give me a single reason why they're increasing our requirements.
It may be as simple as the end justifies the means. In other words, they have to justify their existence by coming up with something. Question I have: what in the world is the public going to what are they going to comment on? They're not raising their bill.
No. And I don't even think it's just with our customers. I think it's countywide or statewide.
A lot of times.
Yeah, or environmental groups.
Environmental conservation groups.
Okay, well, I was thinking that's a pro for increasing testing. Mm-hmm. The con to the customer, there's really nothing.
Right. Additional cost.
Well, additional cost, and you know, if you know, something like this gets more significant, we may be looking at needing to hire another employee.
That's what I was doing. The next question I asked, is there one person that does this testing, two, three, four, five, how many do it?
Well, with us, we because we're a small group, and because we're a small group and we're in charge, we handle everything.
Yeah.
We don't really have any specialists. We have jacks of all trades, and so we cross-train everybody on everything.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't mean on the wastewater side we don't have a couple of guys that are highly certified and know the subject matter more than the rest of the staff, but we do train all the staff to do all the jobs, including this sampling and this monitoring and this lab work. And you know, the good news is they aren't introducing a new parameter to us we haven't tested before.
Right.
They're just increasing the frequency of how we analyze the parameters.
So the time to take the sample, the time expense to run it through the lab again.
Yep, and there is one additional reporting requirement, and my understanding is this is just a one-time thing you have to do, and then it's good for forever, or at least for the foreseeable future. Is we need to one of the reporting requirements they added was we need to do a mixing zone study. And when I mean mixing zone, we're talking about the zone in the Nestucca River where our outfall and our diffuser is located. They want to make sure that we're getting good mixing and good diffusion into the river, as opposed to just having it go down the river in a huge slug for 2 miles.
Right.
So the downside, you know, and so there is some you know, some use and purpose for that. But for a study like that, we're probably going to have to hire a consultant to do it for us. And therefore, it won't take really more of our time, but
no,
consultants aren't cheap.
No.
And so that is something that we need to do during this permit cycle. And it's something we've never had to do before. So
that was the question, whether we've ever done it.
Never done it before. So, and I don't think, I think it'll take a consultant to do it the way that it's intended to be done.
The way that they're going to understand, basically.
Yeah. And so, you know, just mention that as another outcome of this new permit. But really, for me, this was more just making you guys aware, you know, that this is, you know, this is compliance driven, this is regulatory driven, and this new permit is going to increase our costs and our time. So I think we're at a point where we can still absorb it. But my fear is 5 years from now, they'll add another, and then 10 years from now, they'll add more.
Probably. So this permit is due.
I'm sorry.
Permits for a five-year period.
Got it.
Yeah, and then it has to be renewed. And to renew it, it takes a lot of review and a lot of evaluation. They don't just look at it and say, oh, that's good enough. I mean, I was getting emails with questions, phone calls with questions. They were looking back at our historical data. And it took them over a year to bring this draft to us. And we've been operating under a grace period on our old permit for that length of time. The only question is are we already a year into it, into the 5 year? Or does the 5 year start over when the new permit starts?
That's a good question.
Yes, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my guess.
That's the only question I have, but I'm guessing they'll keep the same schedule. So the good news is that, yes, we have to do increased monitoring, but we were able to dodge the first year of the 5 years of doing that because it's already passed. So.
All right, thank you, John.
Yeah, and then just one last thing on the new business. And Rochelle, why don't you broach the subject?
So every year, we're open right now. Our open enrollment closes May 1st. We have the opportunity to change our insurance plan, add people. Like right now, one of our staff members is going to add his weight because he missed the last open enrollment. So during this time, we can change things around. They are offering a new option for orthodontia added to the dental plan, if you choose so. We're bringing it to you because PCJ pays for the medical insurance for the staff members, and so this is your decision because it will be budgeted also. Also showing you on that piece of paper that we are going up 6.5% next year, so we have to factor that into budget as well.
6.5% for the medical?
For the medical.
For the medical. Going up and dental probably, but anyway, okay.
But essentially, the orthodontia addition would increase our monthly bill by $183, which in the long run is not very significant in my eyes. Anybody can use it. It's not specific to children,
right?
But the children would be covered as well.
Yeah, and so for $183 more per month, how much do we pay a month in our insurance in total?
About $19,000.
Yeah, it's a lot.
For an additional,
it's always on there.
Yeah. So for an additional $183 a month, that would give orthodontic benefits to all of our employees and their families if they're employee plus family, right?
What about board members?
Oh, actually,
my teeth straight.
Right.
I'll vote for that.
And you know, I will say that about half our employees have school-age children. But like you say, you know, it's not just a benefit to children. You just got your braces off a few months ago,
yeah,
right?
I paid $6,000 out of pocket. So.
Yeah. So it is an added expense, but it's an added benefit. And for only $183 a month to cover all employees and family.
I think it's a great idea.
It seems reasonable to me.
Yeah, it seems very reasonable to me. And I think if we can do relatively small things like this that help our employees and give them more satisfaction with their jobs, it behooves us to do that.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it probably takes a motion, right?
Okay. So I'll make the motion that we include the orthodontia, I don't know exactly how to say this, coverage in our dental plan for the amount of $183 a month more.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Any discussion, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Great.
Well, thank you, and you know, the staff thanks you as well. So I think it'll be a good addition to our benefit.
Yeah, I think we can do to help our staff.
But that's all for the new business.
Okay, so I see Tim and Jeff. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Jeb's still here.
Okay.
Do you have any questions or comments?
I did have one thing to add about the disc filters. Disc filters should be replaced per manufacturer spec like every 5 years, and we've never replaced them. So we've definitely maintenance them and got our longevity out of those. We're going to add that as a side note.
Thank you.
Yeah, just with routine cleanings and
oh,
so
oh,
forth.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, thank you, Jeb. Anything else, anyone?
Okay.
All right, directors, do you have any comments?
I don't.
Oh, my goodness, it's 6:15 and the meeting is adjourned.